You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in today for Leonard Lopate. Last Thursday, amid increasing levels of violence, Afghanistan's voters headed to the polls for the country's presidential election. Two of the leading candidates have claimed victory, but there are growing reports of fraud. Joining me now for an update on the Afghan elections are Sarah Chase, a former correspondent for NPR who now lives and works in Afghanistan, and Bobby Ghosh, senior editor of Time magazine. And I'm pleased to welcome them both to the show. Thanks for being on.
Anytime.
Thanks for having us.
President Hamid Karzai and former Foreign Minister Abdullah Abdullah have both claimed victory, but official results from the election are not expected until the end of next week. Do we have any idea how the vote tally is going? How about we start with you, Sarah?
Well, I'm down in Kandahar, so I have a kind of very specific slice of the pie here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, frankly, that it would be even possible to get an official vote count from voting in Kandahar based on what I've seen, because about 13 of the 17 districts down here are enough under Taliban control that really I can't imagine more than 5 or 10% of the people, of eligible voters, could have turned out. Even if you're able to make a polling safe, a polling place physically safe, people aren't safe from retaliation afterwards. So even in Kandahar City, 20% maximum. So what that means, that actually opens the door to a lot of the fraud that you mentioned in your introduction, because then government officials can take control of ballot boxes, and because the assumption is that the vote in the South is going to be favorable to Karzai, they put a lot of Karzai ballots in the ballot boxes, and no one really looks that much further. They'll claim 50% turnout. No one's really down here to tell them anything different.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think that it's a really problematic notion even to be able to, you know, announce an official result.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, do you think, given what Sarah's just said, what's the possibility, do you think, of a runoff? And would even a runoff be considered legitimate?
Well, I think there's a larger question on whether the entire process is legitimate if the turnout is going to be so small, and the suspicion, I suspect that the turnout will be even smaller in a runoff, because if people were reluctant to vote last week, then the chances that they'll be more energized 2 weeks from now don't look very good.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, apparently hundreds of polling stations for women didn't even open up in areas where the Taliban has a lot of influence. One organization put the number at 650. How much of the intimidation in the run-up to the election was actually aimed at women as opposed to at folks in general going to the polls?
Well, women have been traditionally a lightning rod issue for the Taliban and for other extremists in that part of the world, and they serve as a symbol of everything that the Taliban and people who support them find objectionable about progress, about modernization, about what they would regard as Western ideas. So they routinely target women, women's schools, women's institutions, and a lot of the rhetoric against the election before during the campaigning was directed at women and how objectionable it was that women should be allowed to vote.
And Sarah, so you're there on the ground. Is it a palpable sense of intimidation of women by the Taliban to keep them from voting?
I haven't experienced any difference in the level of intimidation between women and men.
Mm-hmm.
The threats that went out were absolutely blanket threats. There was shelling of the city that was happening sort of once every half an hour, and in particular aimed at those parts, those areas, or let's say a district close to the city that they don't control, that the sorry Taliban don't control completely. So those districts that they really control, they didn't even have to really perform any acts of violence. The threats were enough.
So
I didn't actually hear of any threats specifically directed at women. What I can say is that in my cooperative, for example, none of our 9 women voted.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of their husbands, I think 2 husbands, 2 sons, and 1 brother of 9 women voted. So there was a little bit more of a sense in the city that men could vote than women.
Now, Sarah, there...
But I think the situation is so... The intimidation is so heavy and across the board here that you're sort of beyond the point, almost, where there would be a distinction between men and women. Mm-hmm.
Now, there are reports that two voters in Kandahar were attacked and their ink-stained fingers cut off by the Taliban. That's a report of two voters. Have you heard of more such incidents like that?
The word that I heard was five in a particular neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure. That can be word of mouth, and so those are sorts of numbers that you can't really necessarily rely on. But I did hear that the Election Complaints Commission has visual, corroboration of at least one such case, and that was certainly what the Taliban put out. I also know that everybody I know who voted immediately cleaned their finger, not in order to vote again, but to be safe.
Mm-hmm. I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Bobby Ghosh, senior editor for Time Magazine, and Sarah Chase, a former correspondent for NPR who now lives and works in Afghanistan. We're talking about the Afghanistan elections. And President Karzai won in 2004 with 55.4% of the vote. Didn't the Bush White House strongly support Karzai then? Let me ask you that, Bobby.
Yes, it was very clear back then that he was America's man, and he still carries some of that. That image has sort of persisted, and many of those who were opposed to him, in fact, used that against him. But clearly, in the 5 years that he has been president, he has disappointed everyone, Afghans in particular, with his leadership, and even towards the end of the Bush administration, the White House was edging away from him, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of the Obama term, it was very clear that the U.S. was very unhappy with him. Indeed, Vice President Obama, Joe Biden
yeah.
stormed out of a dinner meeting with him in mid-sentence. So it was very clear that he's no longer the darling of the U.S.
What was it that President Karzai said that forced the Vice President of the United States to storm out of the dinner in mid-sentence?
If I recall correctly, he was essentially, it was not what he said, but what he would not accept. I think Biden was trying to admonish him a little bit about the corruption and venality of his regime, and I think Karzai was trying to deny what was plainly a fact, and Biden lost patience with these denials and stormed off.
Hmm. Now, Sarah, how is he viewed? How is President Karzai viewed? Leave aside the elections. How is he viewed by the people in Afghanistan? I mean, is he someone who is viewed with contempt, derision? Is it fear? What is it about him that people feel?
It's a combination of contempt and yet helplessness, because you can't quite hold him in contempt because his henchmen are basically the major power brokers throughout the country. They control development assets, traffic in raw materials, traffic in opium. They often are providers of intelligence to, international forces. So the people both feel afraid, meaning they kind of have no recourse from these henchmen, and very, very angry because... it's a kind of commonplace in the United States to say, well, these Afghans, they've never really been governed, and why are we trying to impose Western
mm-hmm.
standards and Western notions of democracy and governance on them when, in fact, corruption is cultural and, they really are more tribally organized than state organized. These are some of the kind of caricatures that I hear very often, whereas I've only heard them from Westerners. I've never heard an Afghan say, I really don't want a functioning central government that treats its people with respect. On the contrary,
mm-hmm.
they all hark back to the period, at least everyone I know and have spoken to literally in 7 years, back to the period prior to the Soviet invasion, when they did have a functioning central government. And they can give you examples about, what some of the local officials' jobs were, how a police officer could go to a village and arrest a suspect without having an armed guard with them and things like that. And they're kind of at their wits' end because they see the abuses of the Karzai regime, and they experience that it was the international community, the United States in particular, that actually brought these people into the country when they had been repudiated in the early 1990s. So they look to us, the international community, to rein in these guys, and they find it preposterous, just as preposterous as the President Biden found it, that Karzai can claim there's no corruption in his government. The problem is we're not really following through. For Mr. Biden to leave a dinner abruptly doesn't solve the Afghan problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the question is, what is the U.S. policy to begin cracking down on what really is rampant abuse of power?
Right. Now, we have less than 4 minutes left, and when a let our listeners know, Sarah is speaking to us by a cell phone from Afghanistan. But Sarah, let me, and Bobby also, who does the United States want to work with? Is there an alternative to Karzai? Is there a bench of Afghani leaders that the United States would rather work with?
Well, the U.S. has recently been pushing the idea that if Karzai won the election, they would lean on him to appoint a chief executive, if you like, someone who would actually be responsible for the day-to-day running of the organization. They like the looks of Ashraf Ghani, who is one of the candidates. I think they would not be averse to Abdullah, but they want Karzai to hand off a lot of the responsibility, leaving him to deal with tribal peacemaking and cutting deals with warlords, while somebody else is responsible for to make sure that there's less corruption, there's more efficiency, that all the aid money that's being received is being appropriately disbursed and used.
I can't answer that question from the U.S. point of view, but I can answer it from the Afghan point of view, which is, I just have to say that a pall of depression has descended over this city since the election. And what everyone says is, we wanted change. We wanted change. You know, so from the perspective of most Afghans I know, almost anyone would be better, because at least it would be different.
Mm-hmm. And my last question for both of you, and very quickly. It's been announced that perhaps the Obama administration will send 20,000 additional troops to Afghanistan. Will that make a difference? Either one of you can go.
I think it'll make a difference, but it will not be decisive. I think my suspicion is that good governance is a greater priority at the moment than more troops. But Sarah, who's there, I think will have a much better sense than I do about that.
I'd really like to echo what you just said. I think that in support of a policy that really focuses on good governance as its first priority, yes, more troops will help. Without that, without being connected to good governance, I'm not sure.
Well, actually, one more question, because the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, said the situation in Afghanistan is, quote, serious and it is deteriorating. Is he right about that?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
I think he's a really a good voice to listen to. He's very sober. He's realistic, but not despairing.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today. Bobby Ghosh, senior editor for Time Magazine, and Sarah Chase, who's on the cell phone, a former correspondent for NPR who now lives and works in Afghanistan. I've been speaking with former NPR correspondent Sarah Chase, who now lives and works in Afghanistan, and Time Magazine senior editor Bobby Ghosh about last week's presidential election in Afghanistan. You guys, thanks so much for joining us.